Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, wouldn't it be delightful if we could stay in the 70s and low 80s at least through, I don't know, the end of February?
We'd be overrun by Southern Californians.
Well,
the only thing they'd be missing is the beach.
We could be pushing upper 80s next week. And
Tuesday looks like the day so far.
Yeah, let's hope we don't get too close to 90, too early for that. Today is Thursday. It's February 20th, 2025. Hope everybody is off to a great start this midday now of Thursday. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio at the Bustos Media Center. We're located in central Tucson, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening podcasts and pretty much every show we have done since we launched our radio project in January of 2011, after 22 years over on PBS Channel 6. When we do our telephone interviews, the Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, we will be utilizing the Live Line extensively today, 790-2040. And we're going to get the ball rolling with our monthly conversation with Will Humble, the Director of Marketing and Public Relations, and he's the Executive Director for the Arizona Public Health Association. He has more than 30 years in the public health business, including more than two decades at the Arizona Department of Health Science, Health Services, where he served in various capacities, including the agency's director from 2009 to 2015. Will, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, Bill. How about you?
Doing very, very well lately. Thank you for asking. How are we doing before we get into some of these policy issues that I want to discuss with you, these national health policy issues? How are we doing? Let's begin with the so-called, bird flu. Has it transitioned into humans here in Arizona?
No. I think there's been a couple of infections among humans with dairy cattle, and because the virus has infected a few cattle too, and with the bird flocks. So it's at this point, it's the only humans that have been infected have been like agricultural workers, and the symptoms have been fairly mild, things like pink eye and not any kind of respiratory distress or anything. So no, the virus has not jumped to humans. It's jumped to a few mammals, mostly like feline species, like, you know, cat species, and a few cattle. But cross our fingers that this doesn't end up infecting humans and then turn into a disease like H1N1 was, that went human to human. Could happen. I think it's unlikely, but, you know, it's always possible.
Well, looking at the numbers of the avian population, the birds that have been put down, killed, if you will, we're talking millions of birds.
Oh, yeah, and millions even just in Arizona, not just across. I mean, there's millions of birds just in Arizona that have either been killed by the virus or the flock manager, I guess you could say the owner, ended up, having to cull the herd to slow the spread of the virus.
And that's why the egg prices are so high, correct, Will?
That's part of it, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely part of the reason why eggs are so high. Everything in our world is supply and demand. And when the supply of the eggs goes down, and by the way, egg supplies are fresh eggs are generally really local, just like milk. So when you buy eggs in the grocery store, by and large, if they're fresh eggs, they'll be from Arizona. Some eggs are, they make powder out of, and that goes into some of the products that we see on the various products on the shelves and stuff. But yeah, the Hickman facility up here in Phoenix has been hit real hard. They've lost more than a million, I'm told, laying hens. So yeah, supply and demand causes the price to go up.
What is your late winter report? What is your late winter report card on infectious diseases right now in Arizona, Will Humboldt?
Arizona's looking a lot better than the rest of the country. We are on the decline for all three of the major viruses, RSV, influenza, and COVID-19. Much of the rest of the country is where we were, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks ago. So we peaked. Influenza was the biggest player this winter, and we peaked right around the holiday season, and the rest of the country peaked, it looks like, last week. So there were, if you heard about, you know, smashed or crowded emergency departments across the country, you might have thought, well, I don't, that doesn't seem to be happening here. And to be sure, the emergency departments here did get pretty busy over the last few weeks, but not necessarily with influenza. Part of it is this, and we talked about it last month, the metapneumovirus, which is not influenza. It's a respiratory virus, but it really socked the country and Arizona pretty hard this year.
Hey, Will, for those of us who are planning to do some traveling, maybe in May and into the summer, and we had our COVID, the new COVID shot, new at the time, was like last September. Would you recommend another dose before traveling this spring, late spring and summer?
Not generally, but if you've got folks out there that are going to go on a cruise or something like that, and you've got some chronic medical conditions or over 65 like I am now, you know, it might be a good idea to talk to your primary care doc and see what they say. But in general, for most people, we're on a fall schedule, just like with influenza. So we'll have, new COVID boosters every fall along with new influenza boosters, but not necessarily in between at this point. But again, like if you've got, you know, COPD or something going on a cruise, you know, talk to your doc about it before you leave.
All right. President Trump, when he was candidate Trump, repeatedly said that he hadn't really delved into Project 2025, didn't know much about it. For someone who said he or professed to not know much about it, when you're looking at public health, some of these items in the Project 25 concerning public health, you have written that this is a disaster for public health.
Well, number one, going back to what you said at the beginning, I mean, it's basically a checklist. You can go through the Project 2025 stuff and look at the things that the Heritage Foundation, who put that report together, wanted to do in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and like they're doing it. So like it's the playbook. Whatever you think about Project 2025, some people love it. I'm not a big fan, but the administration is—it's a blueprint. It's a checklist that they're using. And now I got off on that tangent. And now I forgot your question.
Well, the question is why don't we begin with some of the items that you find particularly troubling, Will? And let's begin with Medicaid.
That's the biggest one, really, in terms of the impact on Arizonans, whether or not they have their health insurance through Medicaid, which in our age, Arizona, it's called Access, is our Medicaid program. This has the potential to be the biggest problem, or really upend the tables of healthcare in a couple of different ways. So if you remember back in after that terrible recession back in 2009 and 10, and the Affordable Care Act came into being just shortly after that. And when that happened, the Affordable Care Act said, hey, look, for people who are considered, quote unquote, childless adults, so people who do not have adults who do not have children living in the house with them still, we will cover those people under the Affordable Care Act, and the federal government will pay 90% of the cost for covering those persons under Access. And so that made it possible with just $1 billion of investment at the state level to cover 550,000 additional people with Medicaid health insurance. These are generally people who make, for example, less than, say, $26,000 a year, something like that. federal government and Project 2025 said, and the Congress is now debating as part of the budget reductions, to cut the federal government's contribution for that childless adult population down to either 64% or 50%. So it'd be a 50-50 share. That's their goal, with, you know, federal government paying 50%, state covering 50%. And, you know, some of your listeners may think, hey, well, what's wrong with that? You know, honestly, it does kind of on a surface sound fair. Like, look, if you want to cover these people, state, come up with the money. The problem in our state is that the 10% that we pay towards those 550,000 people's coverage is covered with what's called a hospital assessment. So hospitals all across the state pay roughly 6% of their net patient revenue towards a fund, and that fund goes to the federal government and pays for the Medicaid coverage for those half a million people. Well, when the federal contribution goes below 80%, and again, their goal is to go to either 65 or 50%, then that assessment goes away, and we don't have any of the money. So that's $1 billion loss to state revenue through the assessment, and the people would automatically lose their health insurance. You know, so this is a huge deal, and it's honestly, Bill, it's a much bigger deal in rural Arizona than it is in urban Arizona.
And these are the people. Yeah, I was going to say rural Arizona was very, very much, of course, deep red and was very much on board for then candidate Trump. And now these are the people that could be most impacted by this, these Medicaid changes.
Yeah, that's right. The percentage of people who get their health insurance through Medicaid or access in rural Arizona is double the rate that we have in the urban areas of Phoenix and Tucson. A lot of reasons for that, but the fact remains that if this goes through, and it looks like it's going to, the people that will predominantly lose their health insurance are going to be people in those Trump plus 20 districts in the rural parts of the state. And, you know, I don't want to see it happen. And if they don't want to see it happen, they ought to talk to, you know, their congresspersons who are going to make making these decisions. A lot of the advocacy is being focused on Mr. Ciscomani, Representative Ciscomani in the southeast part of the state. Some people feel like his experience in state government will lead him to understand what this would really do. And maybe he would not go along with those kinds of federal cuts to Medicaid. But, you know, but we'll see. I don't know. You know, this is all kind of up in the air right now. I can tell you it's in the Project 2025 blueprint, though.
We're a minute or two past the break, but I wanted to stay with this Project 2025 about, we've seen a lot of public health professionals who have been given notice, and many of these people are like considered probationary employees. In other words, they're have been hired within the last year or two. And one of the arguments for not getting rid of these, in many cases, young people who are very energetic and enthusiastic about your field, public health, is that they are people who are bringing new ideas and new energy into the profession.
Right. And they're the least expensive employees.
Yes.
Don't forget that, Bill.
Okay.
They're early in their career, they're not making as much.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other group of people that are getting fired in droves are people who were recently promoted. So you might have been like a USDA employee working on farm stuff and recently took a promotion. Maybe you've been there 20 years. You take a promotion, well, you go back on probation at that point for your new promotionary job, a promotion job. And those people are on the have been on the chopping block the last couple of weeks. So yeah, it's the professional pipeline people, the workers that are the least expensive, as I mentioned, in terms of salary, but also the people that do a lot of the grunt work. So I mean, I'm not against, you know, reducing the federal workforce. I mean, you can always be smart about it, but rather than do it the way they're doing it, which is to just go by class category, do something that's more granular. It might take 6 to 8 months to figure out what positions can be eliminated But there's a pretty impatient crew, and I think there's going to be some unintended consequences that real people are going to experience.
Yeah, and I would advocate for taking a much more cautious approach and case by case, but that's me. Anyway, it's coming up on 12:20. We'll have more with our monthly conversation with the former director of the Arizona Department of Health, and he's now the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, Will Humble. Stick around, Will. We'll be right back with you.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. Welcome back. Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview. Former Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek saying he has the job, the best job he's ever had, and that new job is executive director, or director, if you will, of the Pima Animal Care Center. He'll be our Friday Focus interview tomorrow, and we're bringing back my media co-host, will be an old friend. He kind of has been in and out of the media. Joe Ferguson. He used to work at the Arizona Daily Star. Joe is now handling the online news service called the Tucson Agenda. But that's tomorrow. Right now, we go back to our conversation with the former health director for the state of Arizona, Will Humble, is with us on our live line, which is presented by my friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Had a caller, didn't want to go on the air, who said to me during the break, pull the Band-Aid off. We were talking, Will, about in many cases, very sweeping firings of public health officials. The caller said, you got to do it now or it won't work. Take it you disagree with that.
Well, There was a big change, you know, when, if you remember back when the Clinton administration early on had an effort to really cut the federal workforce, and they, I can't remember the exact percentage, but they reduced the federal, Clinton reduced the size of the federal workforce more than any other president has done. Short of after World War II, there's a lot of, you know, soldiers who dropped off. But besides that, and the approach that Clinton took was he had a task force that went agency by agency, and it they took between, I think it was between 6 and 8 months, and came up with a plan that will it was targeted and more surgical about what it is that they wanted to make the reductions in. And of course, I mean, the Trump administration is going to have different priorities, obviously, than the 1993, Clinton administration. But that's my attitude is to, if you take more time and be more strategic about it, you can be, you can still get it done. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not against, looking at positions and eliminating ones. I did it during my job. When I ran the state health department, I got rid of positions that I didn't think were necessary or useful anymore. And that's a good thing to do. But to do it, in my opinion, is to do it the way this administration is a mistake. And so I have a difference of opinion with, you know, with your caller, and that's okay. I respect that.
All right. Well, taking a look at one of the things you track at the Arizona Public Health Association are the number of bills before the Arizona legislature in the House and Senate pertaining to public health, and kind of went over the list here, and I think it's about 16 or 17, everything from preventive dental care to there's some fertility treatment. You go ahead and kind of summarize the list for us.
Yeah, well, there's hundreds of bills.
Okay, these are just a few that you have highlighted.
Well,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, I do some triage every year and whittle the list down to, let's say, 20 or some 25 that we follow.
Okay.
One of them that one of the things I've been generally work on are bills that relate to people who have a serious mental illness. And we've talked before about the need for better care out at the Arizona State Hospital. There's some efforts along those lines to make that facility more efficient. We've got a bill that would expand the definition of disability to include people with a serious mental illness. Right now, you know, people with developmental disabilities, intellectual disabilities, they're included in or can be included in the state's ALTEX program. That's our program for people with really high needs. But people with a mental illness have always been excluded from the definition of being disabled under state law. So there's an effort I call it a health equity effort. I know that some people think that's a bad word, but what it means is that if you've got a severe psychiatric illness, that really is a disability. And we ought to be providing those people the same opportunities that people with intellectual disabilities have. So that's one that's working its way through. You mentioned the in vitro fertilization there. That is at the both state and national level. There's an effort to make that kind of treatment more affordable. There's a sleeper one that I've been working on that I think is kind of interesting, when you need, let's say, a surgery at one of the hospitals down there in Tucson, and your surgeon works at a different hospital across town.
Right.
You might need to get transferred to that other facility so you can get your procedure or operation at the other hospital. The way it works now is for that to happen, your doctor or the hospital needs to call an ambulance company who schedules that move. And because it's not a 911 call, you can get stuck in your room waiting to get transferred to the other hospital for hours and even days.
Wow.
I shouldn't say days, but more than a day you would wait. And so it creates a real backlog inside these hospitals where they need to discharge somebody to get the care that they need in another hospital, which frees up a bed in their hospital. This transfer thing is really gumming up many of our hospitals that, and it's making care more expensive, but most importantly, it's inconveniencing families and patients. There's a solution down at the Capitol this year that I hope will get over the line this year that says, hey, look, if you're a hospital system, you can transfer your patients using ambulances. You could use an ambulance if that's what's needed for the patient, but you can use your own ambulance to move the patient from place to place. You don't have to call one of these ambulance companies to do it who don't make it a priority. Of course, the ambulance industry, they don't want this to happen.
I guess
they're
not
fighting back hard because they got a sweet deal. They love these interfacility transfers because they make more money on them. I just don't think it's right. I think there's no reason why these patients need to wait so long to get their surgery at a different hospital. And the simple solution, this is the third year going. It's got some momentum, so I'm crossing my fingers that we can get this deregulatory thing done and help out patients and family members and hospitals, by the way.
All right, Will Humble from the Arizona Public Health Association. Where can people find you?
I'm at the Arizona Public Health Association, azpha.org. If you go there right this second, you're going to get like a security screen.
I got
Something's
one.
Wrong with my security.
I got one.
It'll be up and running again tomorrow.
Okay.
Something got outdated on the security. I don't think we got hacked. But anyway, we're at azpha.org. I do a new blog almost every day. And if you're interested in behind-the-scenes public health stuff, that's where you can go.
All right, Will, I hope you have a great rest of the day. And talk to you next month. Thank you.
Right. You too, Bill.
All right. Bye. Will Humble with us as we quickly approach already the midway point of the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Coming up next, our education contributor, Dr. Robert Hendricks. He's on the phone right now. He'll be ready to go after this. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. The sale continues. When I say sale, it's the demolition sale at Zocalo Village. That's right, Tom. Ready to pull the old, well, we won't go the plunger or whatever. Anyway, they've got three buildings over there that are chocked full of great merchandise, and that merchandise is drastically reduced right now. Up to 50% off, and we're talking some beautiful, like dining room sets made out of some beautiful woods like mesquite. So check it out, 3384 East River Road, greenthingsaz.com, and zocalovillage.com. Zocalo Village, of course, is part of the Green Things family on their 13-acre site. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, once a month, it's our pleasure and honor to welcome our contributor on education. He is a lifelong educator, appropriately enough, Dr. Robert Hendricks, who served as superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. He is an associate professor emeritus, associate dean of the University of Arizona College of Education, and a former Arizona School Superintendent of the Year. He remains very active in the Tucson community. His current project, president of the Interfaith Community Services, known as ICS. He's the president of the board of directors, and ICS partners have over 120 faith communities that are involved with the work, and the work includes serving more than 52,000 individuals each year. The organization offers multiple programs that assist those facing food hardship, job loss, and financial crisis. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing fairly well, Bill. Just sort of recovering from a bout of flu, and I think I'm among a lot of people that maybe have that situation. But it's tough to get over. I mean, it's just it's been with me for about a week.
And wow.
I think I'm kind of reaching the home stretch right now.
Well, may I ask, did you get a flu shot this year?
I did.
Okay.
I absolutely did. Absolutely. And my doctor put me on antibiotics, which I think made a big difference.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything you do has side effects. And one thing about these antibiotics, haven't had a lot of experience with them in the past, but mm-hmm. it makes your food taste very strange.
That's true. Yeah. Get the old metallic taste in your mouth. Did we lose Dr. Hendricks? Still there, Bob? Oh, Tom, I think we may have lost him. I'm sure he will give us a call back, but suddenly I got the distinct impression that Bob was no longer on the line, and I think that might be the case. Dr. Robert Hendricks, we're not quite sure what happened, but I think Tom has him back. No, he doesn't have him back, so not quite sure what's going on with his phone line. Tom, what's going on? You don't know. Okay. I wanted to talk to Dr. Hendricks about the situation up at the Capitol with education and teachers. In July, Arizona schools will be losing a guaranteed revenue stream. This is a big deal, of roughly $300 million annually. And as our friends at the Arizona Agenda wrote today, in its place, schools are getting promises from politicians that they will backfill the lost funding and continue working on a plan to replace the funding source, which is Proposition 123. Dr. Hendricks, now back with us on the live line. Oh, we got you back, Bob. How are you?
Okay. Fine.
All right.
Fine. I heard the words Proposition 123.
Yeah, I want to get some clarity from you on this. This is a big deal. The lawmakers seem to be willing to just let this go by the wayside, and this is big money that could be lost for schools.
It is, and I think I have a little bit of an insight as to what's going on here. But
okay,
you know, first, I'm not sure everybody remembers 123, but it's to me, it was a historic proposition in terms of putting teacher salaries in the state of Arizona to a respectable median range. And it came through, I think, a couple avenues. One, at that time, this was 10 years ago, we had a major lawsuit against the state of Arizona in terms of salary equity among teachers. And the governor at the time, Governor Ducey, who had been the state treasurer, figured out that there was a way that maybe we could sidestep the settlement if we were to make use of the interest from our state trust funds. And the state has about 9 million acres of land that was willed to them by the federal government. And a lot of it is leased. A lot of it comes through to the state with a lot of profits and interest. And so we're able to reach a kind of a standoff with the plaintiff there. And in the case of this, they were able to put together Proposition 123, which basically said that this would not cost the taxpayers any money, because the $300 million that came annually in interest from state land holdings could be used for teacher salaries. A lot of discussion. One of these propositions that really had a lot of bipartisan support, Democrats and Republicans thought it was a good idea. Public was not so sure. It wasn't a landslide victory. I thought it was going to be really, really strong in favor of the proposition. Actually squeaked by the margin of 51 to 49. So it was close. But it did pass. And now we are 10 years later, move forward, and this proposition is about to expire. And there doesn't seem to be much of a plan. You've got the Republican GOP who's talking about some other possibilities of some backfill of money to make it through another year. You've got the governor who has a whole different plan for how this money should be used. But nevertheless, Bill, you know, it's not going to be on the ballot in May. Probably what I'm hearing is the best case scenario is that we're looking at November 2026. Mm. Now, the legislative leaders are saying we've got a plan for some backfill, that we're not going to lose that revenue. We can go ahead and make it through another year. But here's the kicker. We'll do the backfill, but we're going to interpret what we use that money for in a much more restrictive, tighter way than it would have been if this proposition were to continue. And therein lies the rub.
On Tuesday, the lawmakers finally took the first baby steps towards sending it back to the ballot in November 2026. But there's still a lot of work to be done, Bob Hendricks.
there is. And there are some headwinds, as there always are. One of them that people don't talk much about is our Republican state treasurer, Kimberlyn Yee, who does not, and she administers the state land trust. She does not believe the plan, the current plan, which would be a 6.9% interest on trust funds, which would, you know, replenish the proposition. She does not believe that that's financially prudent. And so she is going to oppose voter support of the proposition when, in fact, it's put on the docket.
All right. Let's pause right here with Dr. Robert Hendricks, our contributor on education. We'll take a break right here. More with Bob after this.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We send a lot of our listeners over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, a very pretty area of the southwest portion of the Land of Enchantment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org and begin your planning for a nice getaway. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, and this time of year, the Gila National Wilderness looks very tempting with temperatures, and we can start to be talking about temperatures again. It is usually a little cooler over in Silver City, so it makes for perfect hiking weather. When we get up to, well, we get close to 90 degrees, you can count on the fact that it will be in the upper 70s, around 80 in Silver City. Let's go back now on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, to our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, former one-time Arizona Superintendent of the Year and former Flowing Wells School District Superintendent. And Bob, before we go back to education, I know your big event, and you are the president of the Interfaith Community Services Board of Directors. Your big event is the Empty Bowls, B-O-W-L-S, Bowls
right.
event. Is that sold out for March?
It is sold out.
Okay. Okay.
It is sold out. It always sells out a couple weeks before the event, and mm-hmm. typically the event is the first or second day of March, and there are 1,000 tickets, and they're all out the door.
Well, that's,
so we're very delighted about
yeah,
that. But
that's good news.
People who procrastinate sometimes have people call and say, "Well, can you get us in? We'd love to participate." And I say, "Well, I'll let you know ahead of time. I'll put you on the list, and maybe here and you can get in." But it's a wonderful event.
All right. Going back to some of the items I wanted to discuss with you, and this one in particular, Tom Horn, the superintendent of public instruction, is once again talking about a high-stakes high school graduation exam. We've been down this road before, Bob Hendricks.
We have, and also this is a road we've gone down in terms of doing a little fact-checking of Superintendent Horn's data, because he made a statement that 90% of students in Arizona schools are graduating with who are only 2-3% proficient in key subjects. Don't know where that information comes from, but that is very alarming. That's really an indictment of all education. If you got 90% who only have 2-3% proficiency, I'd really like to see the backup data on that. But anyway, he's indicating that we should have another high stakes test. Now, we did have one. It was appealed in 2015. And what Mr. Horn does not indicate is that we still have tests. Mm-hmm. We have ongoing tests that we give juniors and seniors as benchmarks to determine their educational progress. But there's no pass rate requirement. And what Mr. Horn is saying, and he's supported by State Senator Kavanaugh, is propose a statewide exam where juniors and seniors will have multiple opportunities to take a comprehensive exam. Again, I'm not quite sure what they mean as a comprehensive exam, but if they fail, they will not receive a diploma.
Wow.
And he gives exceptions to students who are pursuing a technical skills program and also students with disabilities. But this would be a major event in a student's life, as well as the parents of the students, to say they have gone through 10, 11, 12 years of education, and all of a sudden, this test indicates that they don't know what they're supposed to know, and they don't get a diploma. Now,
that's crazy.
What makes it even more interesting is that homeschoolers and private school students, I've heard this before, will be excluded from this requirement. They would not have to meet this requirement. In fact, if you're a homeschooler, how do you get a high school diploma? Hmm. Well, you get one by ordering one in the mail. And I'm not being facetious.
What?
you create your own transcript.
Are you kidding?
You have to document that your child has taken X number of credits. You give them a grade for each of those courses. And there are agencies that will provide you a diploma. Hmm. So I'm just taking this out to the case that if we were to have this program and we had a bunch of students that didn't pass, well, if I were them, I would declare myself a homeschooler.
Yeah.
And then just leave the system. Go ahead and take all the credits I have. I'll take them and I'll register them on a transcript and I'll just create a diploma and I don't have to worry about it. I can just sidestep the process. But it's ludicrous and I don't understand. It's punitive. And, you know, in fact, there's a national tally bill that indicates that only 8 states currently require high school seniors to pass tests.
Oh, really? You know, getting back to what Mr. Horn, Superintendent Horn, professed to say that 2 or 3% are efficient that actually graduate. What do you think that number really is? What would your guess be? What percentage?
Well, depends on what you describe as a point of
proficiency
of clarity. I mean, are we talking about reading level? Are we talking about math level? I mean, we have tests that measure that right now, and mm-hmm. we know that high school students are by and large generally proficient. Although I would say that with a pandemic, we've seen the numbers drop, but certainly over 60%. Excuse me.
That's all right. You're doing real well for a guy that's recovering from the little bit about of the flu. So it'd be very interesting how he comes up with, you know, you're saying maybe 60% and he's saying 2 or 3%. That's crazy.
Right, and he also made a comment that the parents, you know, there are going to be parents that are going to put pressure on the state not to have their, I think he used the word, their little children pushed into service this way.
Hmm. Wow. All right, so
I don't know.
Yeah. So generally, did I hear you correctly that only, I think you said 8 or 9 states are now requiring some kind of a high stakes high school graduation exam? Did I hear that correct?
That's correct. Hmm. That's correct. And in fact, let me give you a quote from the executive director of a testing agency, the National Testing Agency. He says, increasingly, policymakers have recognized that standardized test hurdles for high school graduation do not improve overall educational outcomes. In fact, they harm thousands of young people who either drop out after failing the exit exam or are forced out of school without high school diplomas, despite completing all of their classroom work.
Yeah, And there's also the whole thing about if you're preparing, for months, maybe months on end for that one big test. And if you fail, what's that going to do to your motivation?
Right. You know, about 25 years ago, as far back as that, we had a competency test that was required by the state for students to pass out of 8th grade.
Hmm.
It was a competency test for 8th grade. It fell apart very quickly because there were so many exceptions. Everybody ultimately passed.
They all passed.
Didn't make any difference.
Well, Bob Hendricks, you've passed the test, and I know that you've passed the test of making it through this half hour with us, and there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thanks for helping me pass the test.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Bob Hendricks, contributor in education. We'll talk to him next month. Thanks, Bob. All right.
Absolutely. Take care, Bill.
Thank you. We will now wrap up today's show. We'll be back in 23 hours. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass will be with us. And I'll be here, and we'll be talking one of my favorite subjects, animal welfare issues, with Steve Kasachek, who now heads Pima Animal Care Center, an organization we've supported through the years here on the show. Hope everybody has a great day.